numbers told the story they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. All proudly brought to you by BetMGM. It's Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin in the house. Still to come this hour, Wes Reynolds talk tour championship with us. Victor Hovland, a little richer, just a little bit richer. $21 million over the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's not bad. Yeah, over like a 7 day span. It's not bad.
$21 million. These golfers, man. Good for him. Good for him. What was it? 68, 64, 66, 63. Add that to his 8 under that he started with in the staggered sort of tour championship format. And he ends up 27 under. And as I said earlier, Xander Schauffele with a closing round 62. For that, you're still 5 strokes back.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. And then the other thing in golf, Paul Goidos, do you see this? Blows the first win on the Champions Tour in 6 years. He was up one on the 17th green with a birdie putt, and he would end up six putting the hole, six putting it, and finish third in the tournament. Man.
Yeah, did you see any of those highlights?
No.
Wild.
Yeah, I got to see this.
He was leading and then six putting.
Wait, if he has a birdie putt, what happened?
He had like an 18-foot birdie.
Oh, okay.
So like nothing wrong with missing that.
Yeah.
But then it was like.
It just flew by?
Then it was short putt after short putt after short putt. Miss. I think he missed like four within three, 4 feet.
How'd he handle it? Did he take it in
stride? I only saw the replays. Oh, okay. He looked like he handled it about as well as any human possibly
How would you have handled it?
The putter throw, like a Happy Gilmore putter throw.
Spiking of the golf ball onto the green. Real quick before we get to Wishnev. Saturday morning before the Notre Dame Navy game, you had a rather amusing take on this whole scene in Dublin, Ireland. Notre Dame ends up crushing Navy 42-3 in a game where we said earlier you couldn't have lost money on this if you were watching. You couldn't have.
Yeah,
Navy was so outmatched. But you said what before the game?
Well, real quick, Sports Business Journal reporting that this is sets a new world record for the most amount of Americans to travel to an international sporting event.
Really?
Yes. I don't really know if that applies to Olympics and World Cup that go on for like weeks or whatever.
What an interesting thing to track.
Yes, it is. I don't really know how you track that. But
there's a guy with a clicker who's like,
yeah, one.
Ten,
you
nine.
American, one,
yeah.
Two.
Yeah.
No, what I was texting you, though, was imagine the like 13-year-old little Irish kid who doesn't know anything about American football watching these teams get off the buses. Because I like the shot always that you get of the teams getting off the buses.
Yeah.
Well, it's great in Ireland when you got Notre Dame showing up and you're probably like, wow, look at all these big guys. Wow, it's huge. And then the Naval Academy gets off the bus in full U.S. military uniforms. And there's probably some kid there being like, well, hey, if I had to make a bet, why would I ever bet on that? This team? I'm betting with the team with the precise execution that comes with American military uniforms. I was cracking up.
The two best things you said were the 12-year-old would be like, do you have to be in the military to play sports in the U.S.?
Right, you don't understand football at all. Yeah.
And the other one was, I'm betting against Notre Dame because I think they're making fun of us.
Yeah, that too.
That's good too.
But like, it's imagine, like we always talk about like how little you could possibly know about American football if you grew up anywhere else, right? That'd be like if we were standing outside Allegiant Stadium for some big cricket tournament and I don't know, the Indian Naval Academy showed up or something wearing their military uniforms, I'd be like, yo, we're betting that squad.
Mm-hmm.
We're betting that squad for sure.
I'd be in for sure. ladies and gentlemen, live and in person in studio by popular demand, everybody's favorite. Star of the Megapod and the Action Showtime, or the Showtime docuseries called Action, Todd Wishnev in the flesh. How you doing, Toddy?
Hi. There's a lot of traffic in this city. Oh, my God. Ridiculous getting down here
today. That's your take on the morning?
Oh, my God. I don't know if anybody knows, but it seems there's a lot of construction. That's all I'm saying.
I've already gone after Caesars this morning for trying to charge us $25 a seat for week zero.
It seems reasonable. I mean, FAU was playing.
This is not the Super. It's not the Super Bowl season.
Sorry.
What did you say?
I said FAU.
Yeah, or FIU. That's right. Remember, didn't FAU play FIU at one point in basketball?
I believe they play in football usually.
Yeah, the Shula Bowl.
The Shula
Bowl every year. Yeah.
So we were okay. I mentioned you in another way this morning also, which I said to JVT and to Kelly. I said that you and I spent 30 minutes debating. Because we were betting all day Saturday and Sunday. we were debating whether our second half Louisiana Tech -7 bet was lucky or just a good bet that shouldn't have taken that long to get home. And your conclusion was that it was lucky.
No, no, at the end I said it was like a coin toss. I don't think we deserved it. I don't think we didn't deserve it.
That was the word, deserved. Did we deserve
it? Right. I don't think we deserved it, but I don't think we didn't deserve it because we did everything you can do possibly on defense. We did almost nothing on offense, but we did miss a couple field goals. And
How did we not deserve it? If the final box score says, and let me just...
Because we made the bet at halftime. You have to look at just the second half stats.
Okay, but it was 447 to 182. And by the way, you know what the passing yards number was in the end? 383 to 4. Oh, pardon me, 333 to 4.
Right. Well, our team had a penchant for 10-play, 36-yard drives
yes,
that end in a missed field goal.
Hank Bachmeier,
I think
I think he realized nobody was open. And he couldn't pass it more than 4 yards.
And we had a really strong 2 to 3 yard running game, which was very solid.
Yes, we did. It was excellent to back.
So it was, I mean, I wanted to take just La Tech to win.
You did.
The game, and that I think we would have deserved.
Young Gill insisted on the spread.
I couldn't because I had money at all these different accounts, and the one that had the money line, it was less, and it was a whole thing. But anyways.
Took us a scamper at the end to get home.
Mazel tov that we got there.
Yeah. Okay, what was your biggest, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, for those who are unfamiliar with Todd's work, let me just also say this about my buddy Todd over here. He is the best in-game bettor. I'm about to compliment you, Todd. You ready for this? You ready for this? The best in-game college basketball, college football bettor I have ever witnessed. How about that?
I don't know about college football yet, but
okay.
We'll see.
All right,
I'm decent. I'm solid.
But now, what was your big, let's just forget the in-game betting for a second. What was your biggest takeaway from week zero?
My biggest takeaway from week zero. Well, I mean, I don't know if I have a full grasp yet on the new rules and how much that's going to change the timing. I didn't feel it was that big a deal this week. You know, the not stopping it on the
because Parlay texted me as the Notre Dame Navy game was winding. He was like, "Look, it made a big deal." I go, "Yeah, but it's Navy."
But that game would have flown regardless.
Yeah, regardless.
And how much time does it really take to get the first down, move the ball to? It was 4 seconds extra.
That's
you
right.
know what I mean? So okay, so it was an extra 35 seconds.
Did we learn anything about Notre Dame, or is Navy just so bad that we didn't learn a thing?
No, you can't learn anything about a lot of teams, and that's what makes college football so great,
mm-hmm.
because there's so few games, misjudgments will be made
absolutely.
All along the way, and that's why I love in-game, because all the geniuses are going to be plugging in their models, and the problem that their models are going to have is there are not enough sample size for any of these teams.
Right.
So what do you really know about the fact that Notre Dame crushed a team that me and you could have lined up and crushed, right? You don't really know anything. And so then now in the next game, they're going to be thinking, and even after 2 or 3 games, a lot of times, depending on what happens in those games, the stats are going to lie.
Yeah.
So to me, that's why watching games and playing in game is so great, because, you know, you can notice after a quarter, hey, wait a second.
Yes. And college football, as I've said multitude of times on this show, no sport reveals itself quicker than college football. Either one team's going to dominate the other, or neither team's going to be able to stop either, so you can play a total on there. I mean,
or it's going to be FIU La Tech, and then you'll feel like your eyes are bleeding.
That's right. And you're like, I can't believe I spent 4 hours of my life doing this.
And, I mean, the best part of college football, and this is why I said to you about the pro football, I would love if pro football would make the field goals harder, meaning move the posts
thing.
In. Because remember in the old days, you know, 15, 20 years ago, late in an NFL game, it was a 47-yarder to win the game. You didn't know if you were going to win or you didn't. Nowadays, 47-yarder, of course he's going to hit it, right? Now they try 58-yarders and they're like, oh yeah, we can make a 58-yarder.
No, you said it well yesterday, which is that, yeah, when we were kids, like a Chip Lowmiller who kicked 50 and 51 consistently was this, oh my God, how good is this guy? Now it's now they're so good, right, that
58-yarders,
somewhere in between pros being that good and college kickers being that bad has to be the right answer. So, by the way, do you favor college ones
wider? College kickers will take years off your life.
Yeah.
I believe my all-time record on either needing him to make it or needing him to miss it is about 3 and 432.
Yeah.
Because if I need it, they're going to always miss it.
I'm going to tell.
And the thing is, in pros, if they could just add a little more uncertainty to
it. So just narrow them a little
bit. Yeah, so that it takes it back to where a 49-yarder was maybe, maybe not.
I agree.
Now it's like a 58-yarder is maybe, maybe not, right? But a 48-yarder, you're like, we got it.
You're supposed to make
right?
that.
And I feel that's too hard on the defense. What, you're going to stop a team every time before they get to the 32-yard line? It's just not fair.
No, you said it also well yesterday, which is, should you really be rewarded 3 points for not getting that far downfield and kicking a 55-yarder, 58-yarder?
You got to the 40-yard line, yeah, and you're going to kick a 57-yarder, and a lot of kickers make them.
I'm going to share with the audience, Todd, because I complimented you once, so now I'm going to sort of backhand compliment you.
Thank you.
The greatest thing in sports betting, Kelly, do you know what the biggest lock in sports betting is?
When Justin Tucker kicking a field goal?
That, but also, when Wishnev says he thinks something's a good bet and then doesn't actually pull the trigger on it.
Oh, it's a lock.
Oh, it's like 88% lifetime.
RJ used to say that we would sit here in the South Point all the time, and I would say, you know, I really like that. And he's like, why don't you bet it? And, I don't know. Of course it would win.
Of course.
Every single time. It's uncanny.
It's amazing.
Yeah, I feel like everybody thinks that about themselves. So the fact that you've noticed that even more about
Todd means
it's even far more
true. It's incredible.
It's disgusting. It's brutal. Indiana Fever, Atlanta Dream. Atlanta Dream's not getting blown out by the Indiana Fever. Give me a break.
We have to talk about this after the break. Todd is a rabid WNBA bettor.
I love the WNBA. And at one time I used to say, how could you bet on WNBA? Well, I freaking love it.
Usually when I say after the break, that's a cue that we got to go to a break here. when we come back, WNBA and how it's not going so well for Todd. That's next. Numbers Game, Feast of the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back on A Numbers Game, live from the South Point, Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, Todd Wishnev in the house on this Monday morning. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Chance Copperpot: is it true that the Nats and the Orioles are top two ROI this MLB season? Yes, it is. Now all the DMV needs is a successful commode season, and Gil gives us that elusive sushi spot. Let's go. It's all happening. Rick Olier: perhaps we can get the construction workers to do a 21 jackhammer salute in honor of your last week there at the South Point. That would be apropos, as they say.
That's great.
Charles Lee, Connecticut: no, say it isn't so. I only discovered South Point because of VSiN. Now it is my home base. Whenever I'm in Vegas, is the whole studio closing down and moving all operations? We'll see. Matthew Mayberry: if I was ever going to legally change my name, Tom Tango would be on the short list of options.
That's good.
He's the best listeners ever. This is from, Steve, like the Steve, he must have Spencer Strider tickets as well. He says, great segment, rooting hard for these Dodgers batters tonight against Zach Gallen. And this is from OJ Green, who says, one note to add on that AL West combo you were having with Spore: Seattle has the tiebreak locked up on Houston. And Jason Stark: a Numbers Game visit from Todd Wishnev's the only thing that could keep me from putting on the start of the U.S. Open. By the way, speaking of that, I have a text about that. On day number one, ESPN, this is from my buddy Scotty Eagle, ESPN cannot even show first ball to last ball coverage of the U.S. Open. First Take is on both ESPN and ESPN News. If you want to watch the matches that are on at 11 a.m. Eastern, you have to subscribe to ESPN Plus, which I guess is part of their plan, he said.
I'm sure it is. I don't understand some of the programming choices. Like, why is it for 3 weeks, it's Little League World Series, like, jammed down your throat, you know, all day, every day. And, you know, hey, I want those kids to get their TV time, but, like, you can't get day one of U.S. Open?
The single most ridiculous thing in sports programming for me is if you watch Tennis Channel enough, there will be matches that you're watching one set plus of, and then they'll just randomly turn away to an interview of, you know, Alexander Stevenson would now like to interview Veronica Kudermetova for all of you. You're like, well, I'm watching a match. What am I doing? Todd Wishnev is here, ladies and gentlemen. So, Todd, the WNBA betting has gone south for you?
I was doing so well early in the season, and then I hit the skids. And although lately it's been coming back, but today, yesterday was a perfect example. I should have been 5-0 and ended up like 2-1-1 or 2-1. Yeah, like 2-1-1, something like that. And then I ended up at the end of the over 77.5 in the Dallas Wings game. And Dallas is ahead by 4. The other team is shooting free throws with 4 seconds left. So they're going to make both and then foul Dallas, and I'll get the win that way. Or if they miss the free throw, they get the rebound, they'll foul Dallas, I'll get the win that way. Either way, I'm going to the line one more time, unless, of course, they miss the free throw, get their own rebound, and there is no free throw.
Which on a free throw should never happen. You should never get your own rebound.
It's just been so much of that, you know. And then or I had over 76 in the second half of the Dream Fever game. They have 38 points in the first 6 minutes of the half, and I lose.
Let me just ask you this. What happens with WNBA fourth quarters where scoring just falls off a cliff?
It doesn't happen every game, but it does seem to happen a lot.
A lot.
Where the girls, I guess, they just tell them, hey, dig in and play some defense, girls.
Dig in.
Dig in, baby. And then you get the Los Angeles Sparks giving you like 12 points in the fourth quarter, and you get screwed. But, you know, that brings up end of third quarter betting. It's interesting that you say that, because for college football, it's very apropos as well. I did it, actually. I think the best bet I made this Saturday was my Notre Dame minus 27.5 end of third quarter bet. They were up 21 at the time in the second quarter. And I was like, wait, I'm getting the ball now, and I'm going to have the whole third quarter to add on more, and I only need one more touchdown? I don't have to worry about the backdoor touchdown in the third quarter.
That's in a game where every Notre Dame bet was an obviously good one, that's probably the best of the bunch.
Well, and in this case, it didn't matter because Navy couldn't score. But there are many games in college football, especially, where a team can sort of move the ball when they're down 3-4 touchdowns, but you would think they have a better chance to move the ball with 8 minutes left in the game than 8 minutes left in the third quarter. So you might feel a lot better making a bet. I believe Caesars has it, some other places have it. You know, your early second quarter, and you're like, you know what? I'll take the point spread for the end of the third quarter rather than have to be nervous.
Yes.
That, you know, okay, you know, I'm up 2 touchdowns, but I'm up 4 touchdowns, laying 23 or something, right? And now I've got to worry, you know, Hawaii's going to backdoor me or something like that.
I mean, there's so many of these, right? Within game, we talk about the 2-for-1. 2-for-1 is known in, you know, the NBA and college basketball, but it's primarily the NBA where a team wants to get 2 possessions in while the other team gets 1 when the clock is, you know, like 35 seconds left. Now, they often end up taking a horrible shot, you know, on that first, just to jam in the 2-for-1. But in football, we do it at the ends of halves.
Oh, there was a great example with UTEP and Jacksonville State.
Right.
UTEP was getting the ball with 4 minutes left in the second quarter. They were going to get the ball coming out in third quarter. They were, I believe, a slight favorite in the game. They were down 10. I took them plus 6.5. And I was like, you have to do it. You're going
to
get 2 possessions in a row as the better team.
Yeah.
And, of course, that covered pretty easily.
Bill Belichick ended up knowing to do this before anybody in the NFL. We do it from a betting perspective when we get the possession before the half and after the half. You thought, even though the Pac-12 network was not available to us and we didn't watch the USC game, you thought there was a valuable lesson in that game betting-wise.
I'll just say that in intramural football in the Israeli Rabbinical Seminary in 1988, I did actually pioneer the move of the end of the second.
Oh, who could forget that?
But that was intramural. But go ahead. What was your question again?
Israeli Rabbinical, was it?
At the Rabbinical Seminary in 1988, we did have an intramural league, which I pioneered getting the end of first half and the beginning of second half
possessions. As a bet or as a player?
Well, we're playing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Were you like, Shmuel, this is what we're going
to
do?
Shmuley, slow it down, baby. We got the ball to start the second half.
I was just curious.
Yeah.
All right.
What were you asking me about?
The USC game had a betting
lesson. USC had a really good betting lesson. If you get a game where a team's like a 30-point favorite and they're going to score like crazy. Now, granted, they don't stop anybody, but San Jose, I think the score at halftime was 21-14. The chances of an explosion of scoring in the second half is much greater when USC is winning, obviously, 21-14 than if they're winning 35-3.
Because they still got to press on the gas.
They're going to press on the gas more. So, I mean, this is kind of obvious, but so you want to put that in your handicap. Now, I don't know how I talked myself into taking second half 31.5 under in that game, because that was what I should have done is what I thought to do, which was USC team total.
Yeah.
Because if they have 21-14 at that point, there's going to be more possessions that USC will be trying to score in the second half than normal if they're up by 7 than if you're up by 21. So it's something you want to think about. I mean, obviously the super smarty pants know this already, but a lot of people don't know that.
No, that the super smarty pants, as you like to put them, they know this, right? But yes, most people are not super smarty pants when it comes to betting for years and years. And these are just, I mean, I think you said it best yesterday, which is, by nature of what we do, we're doing content during the week. So we're going to bat back and forth of this team, that line. Here's what we think. Here's what we don't think. But in the end, is there any scenario ever where watching some of a game and then placing your wager is a worse proposition than doing it pre-flop? And I'm hesitant to think of any.
Other than maybe baseball, where like things can happen in the first inning and stuff like that more often than, you know, in these kind of sports, in like football and basketball, they're giving us information.
Yeah.
You know, all the models in the world can take you up to game time. But if I get to watch the first 19 minutes of a college football game, I've just got a gigantic cornucopia of information that I can now put into my situation, and they're going to be lining the end game based on the original line.
I mean, it's not going to work every time. It's going to lose a lot too, because, you know, again, Louisiana Tech can outgain FIU by a million. Still not going to get
home for
pre-flop.
The
backup Ohio quarterback.
Gilly loved the backup Ohio quarterback. He's like, this guy's pretty good. I'm like, pretty good? He's okay.
we had all these nuanced debates. I'm not putting him in the Hall of Fame.
You did kind of back off after a while.
Well, I made fun of myself. Yeah, I'm like, I think I'm overrating a couple quarterbacks today.
It's a little overrated. I would have been happier with
Nathan Ward. San Diego State was so bad, though.
They were so bad.
They outgained San Diego State by like 80 yards also.
And, you know, like if you watch a lot of games, you know, college football, college basketball, whatever it is, you start to learn little things like Ohio never snaps the ball without there being 5 seconds
this
on the play clock.
Such a great call.
So this is the kind of thing that, like, when you're thinking about your in-game play, your halftime play, you got to remember these little nuances, like Nathan Rourke, he's going to stand there when the play clock's at 18 now. It's at 12 now. It's at 7 now. It's at 3.
That was such a great call. While trailing, they still could not snap the ball quickly.
Right. And you'll start to notice that.
Yeah.
You know, if you watch a lot of games, you'll start to pick up different things that people will do. Coaches will do certain things. You know, for instance, Luke Fickell, the former Cincinnati coach, will do whatever he can to make it uncomfortable for me in my nether regions.
Okay. I thought we were going to get through this, but apparently we couldn't just in the nick of time. Podcast, Megapod Thursdays this year. You excited? You pumped?
What's that? The Megapod? The Megapod. Absolutely, baby. Let's do it. The Megapod. I told them they were doing some documentary down there about Survivor.
Yeah, I was in it.
And they were saying, talk to us on the camera. I was like, well, I'm going to be the Shohei Ohtani of the Circa Millions in Survivor. First 2-time winner of both contests in the same year, baby.
You done?
Shohei contest.
You're done. Todd Wishnev, everybody. Wes Reynolds next. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Throughout the NFL preseason, the VSiN experts have been reevaluating every team to give you the betting edge. Our updated NFL betting guide will have picks from every on-air host. I should probably get on that. Team-specific preseason analysis, how to use VSiN betting splits and football contest strategies if you want the best and most comprehensive collection of picks, predictions, and previews. Now's the time to become a VSiN Pro subscriber for as low as $19 or save 50% off the monthly price with an annual subscription and bet smarter all year long. Sign up today at vsin.com/subscribe. That's vsin.com/subscribe. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Bert Wiedemeyer, how nice to have Mr. Todd Wishnev back in the fold, the fan favorite of the podcast. Keep busting his chops, Gil. He can take it, LOL. Oh, he does a lot of busting of the chops as well. Steven Vegas, special MLB programming idiocy from yesterday. Mets and Angels have two fairly large fan bases. They've essentially had standalone games starting at 9 a.m. Let's alienate the fans by putting it on Peacock. Who wants to see Ohtani or Alonso anyway? Banshees of Atlanta.
Real quick, that might be my current biggest problem with just TV and sports right now. It's if I wanted to watch baseball, I can't. Like, finding games where they are, it's like jump through 3 different streaming services because they're never on actual television.
It's become such a boondoggle, so many of these. And also, tennis, same thing. It's like, okay, well, that match is not on. So let me see if, I'll get this TC Plus subscription. Well, this is like a minute and a half behind actual real time. What am I doing with this?
So, like, if I was tennis or Major League Baseball, right? Social media or whatever, I would be over the top making sure everybody knew exactly where my games could be found every day.
Banshees of Atlantic City. I love Todd Wishnev going full Sinatra Day and addressing the women of the WNBA as girls and Shmuel of the rabbinical seminary as baby. Shmuel's actually a guy, so I don't know what happened there. Jason H11, it sounds like the start of a joke. Okay, I can't even read that one, but yes, it is. Is there anything better than starts the beginning of a joke. Okay, Mark Geiger. Thank you for putting the mensch of the nether regions on for a half hour. Todd is one great guy. He is. Mark Geiger, in-house attorney of a numbers game right here at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Skill Alexander, it's Kelly Bidlin. And this, ladies and gentlemen, is the glue that holds the whole operation together. He's the co-host of Long Shots, the least promoted podcast ever on planet Earth, and the co-host of VSiN Tonight, of course, which he does with Matt Humans, is Wes Reynolds, everybody. How you doing, Wes?
Good morning, Gil. How are you?
I'm good, man. Anything non-sports related you wanted to say off the top? You seen any concerts? Anything cultural you'd like to share with us?
I haven't seen anything lately because I've been getting geared for the season. But now that I have the Friday nights free and I'll be working Sunday nights on VSiN, I can actually go to some shows on Friday night around town because it's like it's always scheduled on the night that you have to work. And then now I get the Friday nights off, and now they're putting more shows on Wednesday nights and Sunday nights. So,
all right,
you can never have it all, right?
Nita Baker in October might be another time for another Gil and Wes bromance date night.
There's Tony in November too.
Tony has done it again. Okay, Wes, let me ask you this about the Tour Championship. Victor Hovland, last week, this week, wins them both. 21 million total, 18 yesterday. He ends up winning this with, when you add the 8 strokes under onto it, 27 under, right? He went 68, 64, 66, 63. He beat Xander Schauffele, who hit a cool 62 yesterday by 5 strokes. Did you walk away with this wanting to bet Victor Hovland for anything in the future? Like, did this change? Obviously, you know, he's one of the top golfers in the world, but did this step him up in a way for you that perhaps you didn't have him at before?
Yeah, I think it does, Gil. I think he's going to be a major champion, and I thought that anyway, but in relatively short order. And to me, because I know that Kelly and Matt Brown and I are going to get together and we're going to do like our little Long Shots awards for the end of the year. So I was kind of thinking about player of the year here, where there's like 4 different candidates. John Rahm with his hot start early in the year and winning the Masters. Scottie Scheffler, who had the best statistical season of probably anybody almost ever and also had a couple wins. Wyndham Clark wins a major championship in another event. But to me, it's Victor Hovland because I think he won 3 really big time events, winning the Memorial in that playoff back in May, and then winning last week at the BMW, winning this week at the Tour Championship. Yeah, I think that he's in taller cotton now. And I think that you've seen the European price get cut actually a little bit in terms of the Ryder Cup. USA were big favorites, but you've started to see money slowly trickle towards Europe. Simply because I think part and parcel because the U.S. team, it's like, okay, who's going to fill out these last several captains picks?
You made Ryder Cup bets? You have some in pocket already?
I do not. I'm going to see what some of the teams are. I know Zach Johnson, for the captain of Team USA, he's going to announce his team tomorrow, late afternoon, early evening. And then the Europeans are going to do it next week after this European Masters they have over in Switzerland.
Back to Hovland for a second. Would you make a master? Would you be an advocate if somebody said to you today, hey, Wes, should I make a Hovland Masters bet right now? Or anybody on the Masters? Who should I bet right now?
Yeah, you probably should, I think, with Victor. I think that he would be the guy. You know, he's the guy that really stands out right now. Now, look, a lot can change. And we know that this Masters market, too, it's different from other majors. That, you know, the U.S. Open might be up basically everywhere for maybe like a month leading into the event. Masters gets open in like October and November, and you have until April, you know, to go ahead and bet this. But I think Victor Hovland, I don't see that price drifting northward, shall we say. I think it's only going to get smaller and smaller.
If you guys did a Long Shots Year in Review pod, Kelly, you guys doing a Long Shots Year in Review?
Yeah, we are.
Okay, we should promote that. Yeah. You're going to get the pro.
Wes just did a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
We're doing an award show.
But if you put a bow on Scottie Scheffler, I think I know where this is going. I mean, what's the rant on him at this point?
The rant is he could have, should have easily had a couple more wins. And this, I think the player of the year discussion would be really, really simple, like Wes just talked about. But the fact that he only won twice makes that an actual discussion when it probably shouldn't be.
An almost disappointing thing, right? Wes, would you co-sign?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you look at the statistical season. I was just looking at some of the data earlier. The fact that he was number one in driving, he was number one in approach, number one tee to green, number one strokes gained total, number one in greens and regulation, number one in money average, most top tens, most money earned before we get to, obviously, the FedEx Cup, and then number one in aggregate scores in majors. And yet he only won two times this year. That's just such an anomaly. So we know what stat is not listed, and it's the putting. And, yep. It reared its ugly head again.
You, going back to the Tour Championship for a second, because I was talking about how, hey, you got to be careful about betting. These are two markets. One was to win the FedEx Cup. The other was the 72-hole market. You actually did dip your toe into the 72-hole market, didn't you? How did that go for you?
Yeah, ended up getting a chop with Xander Schauffele because he shot 19 under, as did Victor Hovland when you take out the starting stroke. So it was a little bit of a disappointment, though, because he did have a two-shot lead with three holes to play. It's like Xander, okay, finally caught him because Xander had been a little bit behind, stroke behind, and then finally caught him. And then Victor Hovland birdie 16 and 17, and then the trophy maker could start the engraving process. So ended up with a chop at 12-1 odds, so basically paid out 6-1.
All right, this is a sort of non-sports betting-ish tilt to this, but where a year from now, this is kind of the right time of year to talk about this now that we've played the FedEx Cup. Where a year from now does the whole PGA Live thing stand?
Ew. It's probably right where it is, depending on how long the deal is, because you hear a different story like every day. The guy that runs the PIF, Yasir, is like, hey, we're in this for the long haul. And then you hear, okay, the PGA Tour is going to control the operational deal of whatever this alliance that they've made. And there's still a lot to be settled about that. So I think we're probably at least a little bit in a holding pattern, because I think when this deal first got announced, or what was slated to be this deal got announced a couple months ago, it's kind of like, okay, all these guys are going to be back. Brooks Koepka is going to be back every week, and Dustin Johnson and Cameron Smith, and we're going to have normalcy, or what I would term as normalcy in this game. But I think it's going to be right where it is. It's going to be interesting to see how this dynamic plays out in the offseason.
Does that sadden you beyond the betting? Does it feel like the sport is diminished, or are you so into the betting you don't really care?
It's a little bit of both. I'm probably right in the middle of those two extremes, because look, I don't want this other tour to exist. I think you have a great tour with the PGA Tour, and then incorporating and actually having that alliance with the DP World Tour to, send some of our best over to their events at least a few times a year. So, yeah, I would like to have all the best guys, and there's a lot of players that aren't on this tour that I think fans would like to see on a week-to-week basis.
Yeah. Kelly, you think it's diminished just in general, the sport itself?
I think it affects the betting side of it, too. I think even if you're involved in the betting, I don't like what the future landscape of betting the PGA Tour looks like. I don't like this. I don't like the no-cut events. We're going to have way more added next year. I think that changes how we approach betting golf tournaments, at least a little bit.
Wes is going to stick around for one more segment. We'll talk about his thoughts on week zero, what he gleaned from that, his thoughts on week one in college football, and week one in the National Football League. We got a week off here, Kelly. It's not like we go right into the NFL season. That's next. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Before you make your next bet, be sure to visit VSiN.com to check the current betting splits data.
Split bets!
What were the money you wound up for that one?
You haven't had this forever.
Like a third base coach waving there. Want to know where the money and bets are moving every game? Well, the betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 10 minutes so you can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public is betting based on the number of tickets and where the money does not match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Betting splits, yet another way that VSiN is here to make you a smarter, better year-round. Check out today's betting splits for every game at VSiN.com. Did we affect the Spencer Strider odds yet? Let's check. Let's check on that.
No, I don't know.
At least at the end of Zach Gallen's outing today, I expected to change.
We hadn't had that read for a few weeks. I kind of thought we were getting a subtle message from management of we don't like Kelly screaming anymore random things into the mic.
You kidding me? That did more for our betting splits page than anything.
Oh, man.
Matt Brown deserves the kudos. He's the founder.
Yeah, that is absolutely right. Down to 2-1 on Spencer Strider.
That's the same it was.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, it was what it was. Wes Reynolds, kind enough to join us once again. By the way, we get tweets at Beatty the Book before we get to Wes. I want to read these. Anyway, I'll read the Jason H. 11. He says, talk about the Wishnip segment. He goes, it sounds like the start of a joke. Two Jews walk into Caesar's sports book, and then he has the crying, laughing emoji. That's me and Todd. We have such a good time. We're cursing at each other. Oh, my God, it's awful. Brian M., Scottie Scheffler plays like Shooter, putts like Happy.
Yeah.
Movie reference. Dusty.
Some of that
is here. Oh, Dusty wants to know, is Guessing Lines featuring the great college football handicapper Kelly Bidlin returning this year? Oh, come on. Are you kidding me? Of course it is. Kelly, do you want to do Guessing Lines?
Of course.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, of course we're doing it. Yeah.
What was your suggestion that you wanted to do? Oh, you wanted to do a season wins Guessing Lines?
Well, like, you know, summer birds, you know, get some good content during the summer. It was going to be guessing win totals.
We should have done it the segment after Dr. Bob gave his. And now for something a little different from Kelly Bidlin. By the way, you know what? I do want to say this about Dr. Bob before we go back to Wes. A lot of those he gave out last week, right? He was quoting numbers. Most of those were still playable. Like, he was quoting one shop, which was out of bounds. But most of those, an offshore one, most of those were still playable from Dr. Bob.
Plus, I can't remember if we talked about it on air or off air, but, like, when Bob doesn't recommend a bet on something that's moved 20 cents, I guarantee you a lot of the audience is still betting that.
I would say I'm going to go with 87.8% right, of the audience plays it.
Exactly.
Wes Reynolds from, of course, not only Long Shots, but co-host of VSiN Tonight joins us once again at WesReynolds1. That's the number one on Twitter. Wes, what did you glean from week zero, man? Anything stick out to you?
Well, one thing is that USC's offense is in midseason form and it's still very good. However, their defense is not. And that was the big thing this year. They gave up 29 points a game last year, 424 yards, get a couple big time transfer portal guys. You know, they kind of lived off turnover margin last year, plus 22. And more often than not, that's going to regress year to year, either positively or negatively in college football. But they had that turnover margin because the offense never turned it over. So Caleb Williams looks like every bit the Heisman favorite. That offense is going to be really, really good. And the first 6 weeks, if you look when they play like Nevada and Stanford and Arizona, that's the time. These next few weeks are the time to get that defense in order, because eventually you start getting the big kids in the second part of the schedule, starting with Notre Dame, who I thought looked very good running the football. I think they took care of Navy easier than I thought that they would. And I know Navy, new offensive coordinator, new head coach. So you figured that they were going to be a little bit off kilter in game one, but still a solid performance from the Irish. And then one of the things, too, that has been leading up to the season in college football, Gil, is the fact that now you don't get the clock stopping after every first down. You only have it in the final 2 minutes of the half, which, look, I'm probably in the minority on this, but I like doing away with that. I don't like when a team gets a first and 10, they get a first down, first play of the game. Hey, let's stop the clock at 14:53 of the first quarter, because these teams are running tempo anyway. They're already to the line of scrimmage by the time the ref has set the ball back in play and blown the whistle to start the clock again. So I don't think it's as big of a deal as people are making it. But because of that, everybody's thinking under. Well, you really only saw, I think it was like 4-3 on Saturday to the under. And if you look at the board here for week one, some games are getting bet under, some games are getting bet over, maybe slightly more to the under because of what I just mentioned. But it's not like across the board where the unders are just getting steamed early in the week, because I think you got to look at every individual situation. A lot of the unders that are getting bet is because maybe you got a first-year head coach, or you got a new coordinator or something like that. So you have new schemes, or a transfer portal quarterback who hasn't had a lot of, you know, hadn't had 2 or 3 years in the same system. So don't draw so many conclusions, I think, on what you're seeing in some of these early betting with the totals.
Just bring it back to that USC game. I got a question for both you guys real quick. If you were a person who was heavy lean Caleb Williams for the Heisman before the season, and after what you saw week one, does that not trigger a bet now with the questionable defense that USC is rolling out there?
I think we even said before the season, we're like, if you want to bet Caleb Williams, just bet him now, because this early season schedule is just going to, this is what you're going to be inundated with from him. You would agree, Wes?
Yeah, absolutely. And you look at the numbers look relatively pedestrian when you consider that they scored 56 points, but 18 to 25, 278, 4 touchdowns, no turnovers, has a lot of weapons, including a kid that's actually a local boy in Las Vegas, Zachariah Branch. If you know that name, and now you're seeing him being put, I think, on a couple of the Heisman Trophy boards, maybe that this is the Devontae Smith from a couple years ago. Zachariah Branch, by the way, played here locally at Bishop Gorman out on the west side of town, but he's going to put up stupid numbers. Caleb Williams, I just think USC, they're going to be ahead in, you know, these first 6 games of the season. But then when they start to get to Notre Dame and they start to have to play Oregon and they start to have to play Washington, these are going to be a lot tougher games. So you're probably, when you look at that, Nevada, Stanford, Arizona State, Colorado, Arizona, big favorites in all of those games. So he's going to continue to put up big numbers. So I don't think that that price is exactly going to lengthen.
Yeah. On the other hand, they didn't give Tim Tebow back-to-backs, and they didn't give Herschel Walker back-to-backs. So you never know, right? Like, I mean, that's the history he's up against with this. It's interesting that you also said, Wes, that we were like, this opinion might be in the minority. Do you really think that opinion about the clock is in the minority? I would think most people would like to do away with
that.
Well,
from what I'm hearing, you know, they don't like it because it's like it's reducing the possessions in the game and all of that. But look, you don't want to have college football games are already long enough as they are. And look, some games are just going to go long just on the nature of the game, especially if you have high scoring games. Whereas the NFL, you kind of see they've done a very good job of keeping their games to 3 hours or 3 hours and 5 minutes, because they don't want the early games extending into the late TV window, which happens all the time in college football. So, yeah, look, I think that the games, you know, try to get them within 3.5 hours. And I just think that the way that the game is played, Gil,
yeah,
in terms of how these offenses now are tempo, tempo, tempo. You don't see, you even saw Navy on Saturday, which is like a snail tempo. They tried to mix it up and go up tempo against Notre Dame. And, you know, it's just like every team is doing that. That's the name of the game in college football now. Run as many plays as fast as you can.
Yeah, if someone asked me what's the greatest rule change in the history of sports, I would say it's the institution of the pitch clock from this year in baseball. Like, I think it's so I'm wondering if this won't be as dramatic, but I'm wondering beyond this week how we'll feel about this as we move forward.
I think I got a bright idea. Maybe find out some way of shaving down your halftime from 37 minutes to a little shorter.
That is outstanding. I said that maybe 3 times on Saturday.
It's so ridiculous. Like, every year it hits you, and you're like, oh my God, I forgot how long these are.
Do you know how many times I said the sports book go, did they take this game down? And they're like, no, it's still halftime. How could it be halftime still? It's like a half hour ago. Okay, Wes, any week one bets that you made in college football or the NFL?
A couple in college football. I did go ahead. I'm going to try to go 2 for 2 with UMass. I took the 38.5. I still think there's 38, 37.5 out there against Auburn. Auburn, new head coach, Hugh Freeze, comes back to the SEC. Previously was at Ole Miss, took the sojourn to Liberty, now back on the plains with Auburn. But new scheme on both sides of the ball, new quarterback as well. Peyton Thorne transfers in from Michigan State. A little bit better of a passer than Robbie Ashford, who's more of the runner. But look, UMass, look, they got a win against an FBS opponent on the road, which they hadn't done in like seemingly 40 years. So there's something to be said for competence and the fact that they got to hit somebody in a different color jersey. So, you know, they're ingrained into the season, and this is the first game for Auburn. So that's a big, big underdog that probably isn't going to be right there to win, but 38.5 is a lot. I took UMass at Auburn.
You took UMass at Auburn. Did you give both, or was that just the one you wanted to give?
Yeah, I have that. I also have North Texas plus 7.5 against Cal.
Okay.
The Stanford line I have, or the Y line I have against Stanford's long gone, so I can't give that out. But we'll be posting them at BSN.com/picks all week long.
Yes, we will. Good plug, Wes. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it as always.
You bet, guys. Thanks for having me.
Wes Reynolds, host of BSN Tonight, of course, co-host of Long Shots with Kelly and Matt Brown. Hopefully, we'll do an NFL preview on the Megapod with Kelly and Matt Brown this week on Beating the Book. Lombardi Line is next. Enjoy from VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.